Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's Brian Lehrer, and this is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios.
It's Monday, August 31st.
Let me begin for just a minute today by adding my voice to those remembering Chadwick Boseman, who, of course, we are all shocked, has died of cancer at the age of 43. Nobody knew that he was even sick. I was lucky enough to see him in two of his films in actual movie theaters, and I miss movie theaters. I saw Black Panther and also Get On Up, in which he played James Brown. And they showed Black Panther on TV with no commercials on ABC last night. TBS also ran it twice this weekend. But since I had seen Black Panther, I rented 42 last night. That was Boseman's breakout film, which I hadn't seen, in which he played Jackie Robinson. 42, the title of the film, was Jackie Robinson's uniform number. And the eerie thing is that Boseman died on Friday, which was Jackie Robinson Day in Major League Baseball. Once a year, every player in the majors wears number 42 in honor of Jackie Robinson and, by extension, in honor of racial justice in general. Now, usually it's in April, on the day of Jackie Robinson's first Major League game, but because they didn't play in April, they did it this year on Friday, August 28th. And this year, considering what's going on, you know, some teams wore those number 42 jerseys, not just on Friday, August 28th, but all weekend. So why August 28th? Well, that day is so significant in history. It actually appears in the film with the date noted on the screen when the general manager of the Brooklyn Dodgers met with Jackie. It was August 28th, 1945, to discuss breaking baseball's color barrier, which then went on to actually happen in the baseball season of 1947. And of course, August 28th, 18 years later, was the day of the March on Washington with the MLK and John Lewis speeches and everything. So on Friday, thousands of people were already gathering and marching again to commemorate August 28th in Washington. It's also my parents' wedding anniversary, and I will spare them saying the year, but happy anniversary, Mom and Dad. And I've always been aware that their day is the same as March on Washington Day. But I didn't know about that piece of Jackie Robinson history until this weekend, August 28th, 1945, his conversation with the top guy on the Brooklyn Dodgers, Branch Rickey. And tragically, on August 28th, 2020, Chadwick Boseman, who brought Jackie's story to millions from the generations too young to have been aware at the time, passed away, shocking the world after keeping his illness private. So the last thing we need in 2020 is any more grief, right? But here we are. So Chadwick Boseman, rest in peace and rest in power. With me now, Shauna Thomas, political contributor for NBC News and MSNBC and content development executive, primarily developing short-form news programming with NBC News, CBS News, and the BBC for the mobile platform Quibi. Some of you may know her from her previous work, too, as political director and Washington bureau chief for Vice News and Vice News Tonight on HBO. Shauna, thanks for coming on with us. Welcome back to WNYC.
No, thank you for having me back.
I saw that in response to ABC's announcement that it would air Black Panther commercial-free on Sunday, you tweeted, "So I guess I know what I'm doing tonight." Did you actually get to see it?
I did watch it. I hadn't seen it in a while, and I, you know, like almost everyone else, saw it in the movie theater and just remember crying while I was watching it. And I, you know, I will say this. I love Marvel movies. I love superhero movies. I'm a big fan of this. But this idea of something that was unapologetically Black being brought into the Marvel Disney universe, which is, you know, such a big money making thing, as well as having something to look up to on that screen, actually made me cry in the movie theater. And so I think part of people are mourning Chadwick Boseman and the person he is, but I think they're also mourning just this idea of a superhero that was for us, mm-hmm. that also acknowledged that other people other than us, other than Black people, could fall in love with too. A friend posted an article on my Facebook page that basically said that, you know, that people are also mourning the idea of Black imagination. Like, seeing that on screen allows people to dream in a way, and that is part of the power of media, not just the media that you and I are doing right now, but the mm-hmm. media that are movies, that is art, that is entertainment. And it can expand a child's mind. It can expand an adult's mind. It can make me cry. And so I think where all of that is part of the outpouring of grief that we're sort of seeing in this country.
And it also came out that he had spent time with children with cancer to give back, even as he was going through chemo and going through surgeries between filming sessions. Imagine, he was fighting this cancer, which turned out to be terminal, while filming Black Panther. And how to some of the kids he became very close through all of that, took the time to do that. And I can't even imagine the life he was living. And, you know, in a year of so much grief already, the world did not need to lose Chadwick Boseman in this shocking way, too.
No, 2020 is not doing us any favors right now. But I love that these stories about him and children with cancer are sort of coming out, because that's another example of taking your struggle and then being like, I can do something good for other people. I can have these moments with these children. I can bring this into their lives, and not making it about him. And we think so much of celebrity is about attention to me, attention to me, attention to me. And that's part of what you need to sell movies, and I get that. But this was just one of those little moments that you're like, oh, he was a little bit more than that. And for many, he was much, much more than that.
Shona Thomas from Quibi and NBC News with us. All right, to the presidential race. The convention wisdom now is that the Democrats sought to focus on Biden's decency as compared with Trump, and that Trump has failed on the virus, and they downplayed other issues, while Trump focused on scaring people about socialism and violence and convinced people he's not racist. And virus? What virus? I don't see a virus. So here is one short clip from each of their speeches, very short in each case, so you don't have to suffer through these again. Biden from the end of Biden from the end of his.
May history be able to say that the end of this chapter of American darkness began here tonight, as love and hope and light join in the battle for the soul of the nation.
And Trump kind of responding to that in his.
We laid off workers in Michigan, Ohio, New Hampshire, Pennsylvania, and many other states. They didn't want to hear Biden's hollow words of empathy. They wanted their jobs back.
Shona, where does this all leave us?
Well, you know, as I've thought about both conventions since we've had a few days away from the GOP convention, it really, the versions of America that both of these conventions pointed out are so far away from each other. It is like two different worlds. And, you know, Barack Obama always used to talk, there's no like red America or blue America, there's the United States of America. We've heard that quote maybe 1,000 times since his speech in 2004 at the Democratic National Convention. But really, both these conventions were a stark reminder that there is a red America and there is a blue America, and they see things very, very differently. Mm. What I don't think either convention did personally is truly appeal to that quote unquote undecided voter. And part of that is, I don't know if that undecided voter who isn't totally sure what's going on or hasn't really tuned into the presidential election or whatever was watching either of these conventions. So I think the Republican convention was about convincing people who are inclined to vote for President Trump, but maybe haven't decided whether they want to take the time or the energy to vote yet, to get them to vote. And I think on the Democratic side, this was about convincing someone who is inclined to vote for Joe Biden, maybe a first-time young voter or something like that, who is willing to watch, that they should go ahead and do all the work it's going to take to vote. And we saw in Michelle Obama's speech at the Democratic National Convention that she spent some time focusing on this idea of voting, that once you've actually mailed your ballot in, or once you've decided you're going to take that lunch bag and wait in line for hours, if that's what it takes in the place that you're in, that you need to encourage other people to do that. And I think part of that is because, you know, everybody's still looking at the numbers from 2016 and the comparison to 2012, especially on the Democratic side. And those voters who voted for President Obama in 2012 but did not show up at all in 2016, as well as young voters who did not show up at all in 2016. And voters, increasing voter turnout is the game for Democrats. They have to figure out how to reach those people who the polls don't even really capture, because most polls are about likely voters and registered voters. So you need to try to figure out, how do you get people who aren't those people to, one, register to vote, and two, actually show up on the day or do all the steps it's going to take to get your ballot in via mail. But really, if I don't think either convention is going to convince someone to switch sides, because I think if you are someone who is inclined to vote for Joe Biden, you are more liberal, more progressive, you are even a centrist Democrat, you look at the Republican convention and you're like, what world are they living in? And I think if you're someone who is conservative and inclined to vote for President Trump, you look at the Democratic convention, and despite, you know, John Kasich speaking at the crossroads, you look at them and you're like, what world are they living in? So these are two, we got this window into sort of two separate ways that America is seeing itself. And that is fascinating.
Yeah, well put. By the way, about August 28th, Twitter is reminding me that that was also the date that Emmett Till was killed. And that was 1955. So this year would be the 65th anniversary of that. So as a day in racial justice history, on, you know, so many levels, August 28th, just adding that one in now that I've been reminded of it. Shauna, there was this Trump paradox that I'm still trying to figure out, of running against Black Lives Matter and never saying Black Lives Matter except to associate it with anarchy, while at the same time trying to make a show of how not racist he is. So a couple of clips. We had this from Rudy Giuliani. It was the only time I noticed the words Black Lives Matter spoken at that convention.
So Black Lives Matter and Antifa sprang into action. And in a flash, they hijacked the peaceful protests into vicious, brutal riots.
So associating Black Lives Matter with Antifa. And we had this from Mike Pence, and I don't think this one got enough attention at all. Pence denying the existence of systemic racism in law enforcement at all.
Now, Joe Biden says that America is systemically racist, and that law enforcement in America has, and I quote, an implicit bias against minorities.
And so, by contrast, he was saying if Joe Biden believes that, he didn't even have to state the end of the thought. He doesn't believe it. Mm-hmm. And as I listened to that clip again just now, wasn't only law enforcement. He started it by saying Joe Biden believes America is systemically racist. So the Republican convention was premised in part on rejecting that idea. And at the same time, they gave us many black speakers featured saying what a great guy the president is for black people, and Trump pardoning people and doing a naturalization ceremony for immigrants of color, including from Africa, and the president himself making a point to say this.
We worked hard to pass historic criminal justice reform, prison reform, opportunity zones, and long-term funding of historically black colleges and universities.
So, Shauna, and I hope I kept those blessedly short, maybe Trump was just gaslighting us, but how do you even understand what he was trying to do? Pence denying the black experience of systemic racism in this country, and Trump claiming to be fighting it.
So this goes back to the alternate realities of the Republican convention and the Democratic convention. But I think, I don't know if President Trump necessarily was trying to make sure he sort of shores up all sides, especially on this race conversation. But I do think the Republican Party who is a big part of this national convention, along with the Trump campaign, wanted to make sure that if you were watching their convention and you're on the fence about voting, but you lean towards President Trump, but you don't like, you know, his tone about things, you don't like some of the divisive stuff he puts on Twitter and that kind of thing, that, hey, by the way, behind the scenes, as well as some of these things we're going to do to make a show of it, you know, he's not a bad guy. He gets it. He is trying to help people other than people who look like himself. But in some ways, and I think like this is sort of the dissonance that you're pointing to, if you are a more liberally minded Black person and you're watching that and you hear Vice President Mike Pence say there isn't systemic racism in this country, and you hear, you know, former governor and former UN ambassador Nikki Haley also said on Monday night that America is not a racist country, then what you actually hear is all these things are nice. And yes, you can give more money to HBCUs and you can be part of a criminal justice reform package that people were talking about before you became president. But if that is actually the core belief of this party and these people, then how do we address any of what we are actually seeing in the streets right now? How do we move forward as a country if we cannot agree on what one of the major problems of the country is? So I think this, for the Republican convention, it contributed to sort of the muddled feeling that I wasn't totally clear, other than maybe the law and order theme, what the Republicans wanted us to take away from it. I think they threw a lot at the wall. I think it was actually a well-produced convention, just to sort of see what stuck. And I think what we're realizing right now, what they think has stuck, and this is the campaign as well as the Republican Party, is that law and order message. So if that's what you're taking out of it, I think that in the end was the point of the convention. And I'm not sure that gets you a lot more Black voters. I'm not sure it gets you a lot more Hispanic voters. I'm not sure it gets you a lot more voters, but maybe it does shore up your base in a way to make sure that they show up and vote.
Now, here's a few more. Twitter is giving me a few more August 28th things. This is so cool. I'm glad I accidentally started this meme. August 28th, writes one listener, is the day that Jack Kirby was born. Kirby was the comic book writer, artist who created Black Panther. And then somebody else reminds me, August 28th, 2008 was the date Obama accepted the nomination. And now that that comes up, I remember it well. I was actually there at the convention in Denver. And yes, people were talking about it at the time, that was the, 45th anniversary of the March on Washington. And the line, you know, the arc of the universe, moral arc of the universe is long, but it bent over those 45 years toward the nomination of Barack Obama. So also August 28th. In 2008. So thank you, listeners, for those. Arthur in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Arthur.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. And good morning to you and your guests and
good morning.
Everyone else. What I wanted to say, too, about Chasman was, I'm sorry, Mr. Bozeman. I saw 42 in the theater like you, and I thought he was great. And I saw him in Black Panther, and also, too, that the pay it forward, as I said to the call, the pay it forward thing that he did when he was working with children who had cancer, and also the fact that Denzel had paid for him, I heard, to go to Oxford, to go to England, and Debbie Allen was one of his teachers, and it made me also think of the fact that not long after he died, it came out that Robin Williams had paid for a young woman here in New York to go to the same alma mater he went to, and that's Jessica Chastain. So I love it when people actually they are able to do it and they just go ahead and they pay this forward. And I wanted to say too about Chasman that I think that like Heath Ledger and James Dean before him, he will be remembered for quite some time to come. That I wanted to say, and also I saw the same things you guys saw with the Republican and Democratic convention. I saw it as basically, let's put on these good black people to show how, and you know, how we really are. And when I listened to them talk, my whole only feeling was when Nikki Haley spoke about no racism, and I saw Tim Scott, I thought to myself, if you two and Nikki, your mother with her sari and your father with his turban, were to walk in front of the McCluskey's house, they would bring out more guns. They would bring out so many guns, their neighbors would think they were celebrating Humphrey Bogart's birthday.
You tied it back to a movie reference, Arthur. That was brilliant.
Well, take care. There are other people, so I just wanted
Thank
to say
you.
That.
Please call us again. Thank you very much. Do you want to reflect on any of that, Shauna?
You know, I think the one thing that I was struck by when we go back to this conversation about is America racist? Is this a racist country? That kind of thing is just if the message coming out of the Republican National Convention is this law and order message. And that is what we see President Trump back up when he goes to Kenosha, Wisconsin. And I believe I read that he is going to meet with law enforcement, but I haven't read that he's going to meet with any, Black Lives Matter people. And I'm not sure they would want to meet with him, but if he is reaching his hand out to one side and not the other, then it almost doesn't matter that he pardoned Alice Johnson and you know, congratulations to her, and that that is a good thing. And it almost doesn't matter that we saw this naturalization ceremony, where, by the way, they didn't necessarily tell all of the people there they were going to be in a Republican National Convention performance. And then we also saw, I believe, the New York Times reporting that people who were in the housing video didn't necessarily know that the video was for the convention. So you end up with this trail of stories after the convention that speak to the Republican Party sort of not allowing minorities to have agency for themselves and decide what they want to be a part of and what they don't want to be a part of. And I totally don't understand why you wouldn't have just found people who want to do that, who want to do that story. And then when the press goes and contacts them, they're telling great stories about President Trump. That would be the lasting tale from that.
Right.
But if the president goes to Kenosha, Wisconsin, and it's only about law and order, and it's not about trying to, like, get to the heart of this matter. And I'm not saying that supporting police or trying to figure out how to make policing better or what the law or what the officers feel is not important, but he's supposed to be president for the whole United States. So they will tell us what their message was out of that convention. And I believe Vice President Biden is supposed to speak today. He will tell us what his message out of their conventions is, too.
Shauna, we're almost out of time. Yeah. You know, potentially, God help us, Trump planning to go to Kenosha. Normally, a president would go to try to calm things down and heal in a situation like that. But there's every suspicion that Trump is going there to further provoke because he thinks it plays to his political advantage. Considering who he is and what he often does, how do you even see this going?
I mean, I don't want to pretend like I know the future. I do not know the future, but I can see a world where there are even more protests Tuesday evening and more protests Wednesday evening. And I'm not necessarily saying those will be riots. I don't necessarily believe that. Mm-hmm. But I am saying it could actually galvanize people to come out even more, depending on what the president expresses.
Right.
And I think one thing we have to remember about politics is fear sells, right? People sometimes vote on what they are afraid of. And that is part of what I think the Trump campaign is banking on. But also remember, the people who are in the streets who are protesting systemic racism, the moms who have young black sons, all this, they're scared too. And so the president, yes, is a flashpoint. Yes, there might be more protests in Wisconsin over the next few days. But remember that when you see the president, depending on what he says, that can galvanize both sides of this argument, because there is fear that, you know, you're if he gets another 4 years, that your concerns about systemic racism and policing will not be heard at all. And what does that mean for, let's say, your young black son or your mm-hmm. young black male cousin? And then on the other side, if their message speaks to certain people that, like, these riots are going to put your home, your property, your person at risk, then that can also galvanize that side. So this can, I think there is a mm-hmm. world where no matter what, it actually calls more attention to the election, and the more attention called to the election, the more likely people will vote.
So last question then, where is Joe Biden? Trump is flying all over the country making these appearances. What's Biden yeah. doing?
Well, he is, I believe, supposed to speak today, and the campaign has expressed that he will be doing more events. But the Democratic Party and the Biden campaign do have to remember that one thing they were trying to do with their convention was create this different picture when it comes to COVID-19 than what the Republicans would do. They were trying to create a picture of, you know, we're not holding an actual convention. People aren't speaking in front of crowds. We're not doing that because COVID-19 is actually important and we don't want to put people at risk. And so the Biden campaign has to figure out how do they get their guy, as well as Senator Kamala Harris, out into the world while also not losing kind of the moral high ground on COVID-19. And I think they're trying to figure out how to do that. And also still get that campaign imagery that you sort of want people to see on TV and in images and things like that.
Shawna Thomas, political contributor for NBC News and MSNBC and content development executive, primarily developing short-form news programming with NBC News, CBS News, and the BBC for the mobile platform Quibi. Some of you may know her from her previous work as political director and Washington bureau chief for Vice News and Vice News Tonight on HBO. You're such a good analyst. I always pay a little extra attention when you're on NBC News. Do you want to promote anything that you have coming up on Quibi?
Well, one, thank you for the compliment. And two, I just want to encourage people to check out Quibi, Quibi, in the Android and iOS app stores. All episodes are less than 10 minutes, and a lot of the stuff that I work on are daily shows that are new, that are news, 5 or 7 days a week. There is always new content on the platform, and there is a range of things, and I think people should really check it out. I will put in a special shout-out for a documentary called Blackballed, which is on the platform, which is about the L.A. Clippers and Don Sterling controversy, also about race, also about athletes really, really stepping up to the plate to get something done. You will see similarities to what we are seeing right now in this country, and it is worth taking a look at and going back and looking at that period of time in history to sort of get an idea of how the NBA sort of has found its voice. So check out Blackballed. Quibi stands for Quick Bites. Download it on your iPhone or your Android device.
And thanks for so much time today, Shawna. We appreciate it. Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.